Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. The UK riots have dominated the news agenda in the last fortnight. Public violence and disorder, fueled by anti-immigrant sentiment, has been seen in England and Northern Ireland in the aftermath of the murder of three young girls in Southport, Merseyside, on the 29th of July. Reporting on the ground and throughout this whole crisis is the Liverpool Echo, the Reach PLC-owned news outlet. Joining us today is the editor Maria Breslin, who talks to us about the heavy workload and mental load of covering such a politically charged community story. It's a news story where she's had to wade through various challenges, like the physical abuse of her journalists, disinformation, and the priorities of editorial coverage. We'll be chewing over all of that today, so don't go anywhere. Maria, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thank you ever so much for coming onto our show.
Thanks for inviting me, Jacob.
It's been 2 weeks since the tragic Southport stabbing, which I imagine was really, really close to home for you and the Liverpool Echo team. Just how close to home was it, Maria?
Well, I think, you know, it's very different for regional news brands because we're very much part of the communities that we serve. So, you know, our children go to the same schools, we eat out in the same restaurants, we get the same buses or trains to work. So you know, we are part of those communities, and that does make it hit home a lot harder. And also we're still here when the national media's gone home. So the weight of responsibility is quite heavy at times, I think.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, was it physically close to home? Is it down the road from you where it happened?
Yeah, I mean, Southport is very much part of our patch. It's part of Merseyside. You know, it's perhaps 45 minutes from our office here in Liverpool city centre. But we have a number of journalists who live in the town. And obviously for them, covering it sensitively and responsibly meant a lot, really.
Yeah, I love what you said a second ago about the longer lasting impact this will have on your community that you will, of course, continue to look at even as more national titles perhaps turn their focus elsewhere. But in today's conversation, I really want to get at what this story and the subsequent riots have really meant for your newsroom, both from a workload perspective but also a mental workload. So I'll start with the former. When all of this was unfolding 2 weeks ago, what was your thought process? How did you organise your thoughts in terms of this is how the Liverpool Echo should cover this story?
I mean, we were first to hear about the sort of dreadful scenes that were unfolding at that dance class. As I said, we have a number of members of our team who live in the town, so they are well connected. We heard quite early that perhaps it was a serious incident, and we sent out a reporter straight away. You know, we very much have boots on the ground all the time. The narrative of people being chained to their desks is far from the truth. We are out and about every single day. It very, very quickly became clear that this was a huge incident, and we then mobilised two more reporters and a photographer. I've been a journalist for an awful long time, and I've, you know, seen some pretty dreadful things, but the deaths of three little girls that are a Taylor Swift dance and bracelet making class did not seem comprehensible, really. And I know, you know, there were tears shed in the office, but, you know, we're quite robust. But nevertheless, something like that, you know, does hit home, especially to people who've recently maybe become parents. It's also horribly real, I guess.
I have a young daughter myself, so I get it completely.
Yeah.
Where does this rank in your career as in terms of like the toughest story that you've had to deal with?
It's right up there. It really is right up there. You know, we do become to a certain degree hardened, I think, and I guess that is a way of sort of shielding ourselves from some of the dreadful things that we deal with on, you know, not a daily basis, thankfully, but a weekly or monthly basis. And there's one member of the team who's been around the block a little bit, and I know he was visibly shaken by it. He's previously been a Crown Court reporter, so has been exposed to quite a lot in his time, but I could see how it impacted on him. So, you know, looking after each other has been really key to getting through this.
Yeah, we'll definitely go into that in some more depth later on. But I mean, certainly one thing that I engaged with over the last 2 weeks was the live blog that's been running very consistently, very strongly throughout the last fortnight. Has that been a particular emphasis, and have you seen strong engagement there?
Yeah, we have. I mean, live coverage is something that I'm particularly proud of. It's something I think we do well. And it's you know, ever since we first covered the Hillsborough inquest live, you know, I see it very much as a community service, really, a way of sort of people keeping in touch with what's going on, finding out about what's going on in real time. So, you know, it is a really good way of sharing trusted, solid, fact-checked information, I think. So live coverage was always going to be key to this, and we've continued that throughout the few weeks in terms of our coverage of Southport, but also the subsequent trouble and violence that we've seen on our streets in terms of covering the court cases, etc. So for me, our live coverage is a community service, and I know it's something that our audience values.
I love that you see it that way. Do you have a specific checklist in your head in terms of what you want to be emphasising in your live reporting, or what were the particular things you wanted to make sure were in there?
I think most important to us was that our news was trusted. There was, you know, disinformation. It may be something we speak about later, but we thought very long and hard about how we do populate our live blog. You know, we very much fact check everything. You know, we don't want to go for the not wrong for long approach, really. I think I want people, when they come to Liverpool Echo, to know that what they read is factual and accurate. So that is always at the forefront of our mind, while very much trying to sort of bring people updates on what was quite a fast-developing situation, both in Southport and what's happened since.
Trust is an interesting one, isn't it? Because so much of what happened afterwards was fueled by almost anti-media sentiment, right? So how did you think about winning over trust when that was kind of quite a scarce thing going around at that point in time?
I mean, I think in our coverage, at the forefront of our mind always has been the families of the three girls who died that day, and obviously the other children and adults who were injured. And we always considered whether what we were publishing would cause them any grief or further distress.
Yeah.
That was always point one. And point two is this going to help the police investigation? So we talked long and hard about what we thought was right for the Liverpool Echo when covering the events of that day. And we stuck to that.
Yeah.
We didn't let our heads be turned by anything that was perhaps being printed in the national media, whether it was video content, whether it was a background information about the suspect. We knew what we wanted to do and who we wanted to be and who we wanted to represent, and we stuck to that.
That's really interesting. Is there anything you decided not to cover in the last 2 weeks?
There was videos of purportedly to be the suspect. There was the issue of his parents' background in terms of how they came to Southport, and all of that we considered, you know, really carefully. You know, was that relevant? How was that helping the police? How did that impact on the families? So,
and you didn't touch any of that?
We didn't. We decided not to. I'm not saying we're always right, but I think the most perhaps difficult decision we made was on the night that violent disorder did break out in Southport, and our print splash was a picture of the three girls. And you know, what was most important, was it those tributes to those girls, or was it the fact that people were throwing bricks and looting shops and setting fire to police vehicles? And we decided the girls was what mattered. So we, you know, while we understood the gravity of what was happening on the streets of Southport, we sort of weren't swayed from what really was key to what we were trying to do that day.
Because you didn't want your readers to lose sight of what was, in your mind, most important.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I had a wobble the next day. I wasn't sure that we'd done the right thing, but a week later I was certain we had.
You stand by that decision now?
Absolutely, yeah.
Amazing. Were there any other really tough choices over the last 2 weeks?
There's been a list of protests, for want of a better word, and that was another word we agonised over, ever since the trouble on the streets of Liverpool last Saturday. And, you know, how much credence do we give this? Do we talk about it in advance? Do we just see what happens on the night? All those were decisions that we sort of grappled with a little bit, and we very much sort of took the stance of let's see what happens, let's not, you know, talk about anything in advance, and if it happens then we'll take a decision on whether we cover it or not, because what we don't want to do is sort of fan the flames, I guess.
Yeah, but you still have those wobbles, you still have those moments of self-doubt, did I do the right thing, even this far into your career?
Oh God, yeah, definitely, because it, you know, being an editor of any title is, you know, a great privilege, but it's also a huge responsibility, and people aren't shy to tell you when you get it wrong, that's for sure.
Why did you have that wobble the day after when you went with the splash?
It just felt what had happened was hugely significant, and obviously scenes from streets of Southport were all over the rest of the media landscape. But that's okay. That was the right place for us to be, I think. It really was the right place for us to be. But obviously it was significant. A member of our reporting team was assaulted that night. Equipment was stolen, glasses broken, so...
Did you say assaulted?
Yeah, assaulted, yeah.
Physically?
Physically, yeah. So, you know, it was a significant moment, and that, you know, what happened was absolutely shocking. So you do wonder whether, you know, should that have been my front page, but as I say, I stand by it.
But you've done plenty ever since, of course, on the right, so in the end, it all sort of... evens out. But I mean, how difficult is it to achieve balance in a news story like this? Because I mean, there's so many sort of charged sides to what's happened over the last 2 weeks. I mean, has that been something you've mulled on quite a bit?
I think I've mulled on it personally, yeah. You know, what how's this happened? What does this mean? It's really difficult, and I think a real factor in sort of our shock as a newsroom was the fact that so many people involved in the disorder we've seen are local people. And that's, you know, that's quite difficult to admit, I think, that, you know, they are people who live in our communities. So there is an element at some point of having to unpack what happened and understanding why. But, you know, I'm not sure the last few weeks have been the time for that, really.
No? How come?
I think we've been very much focused on what happened in Southport. I think there has been a lot of disinformation or misinformation spread. I think that can impact on communities that are disaffected or people who are disaffected within certain communities. And, you know, there's some people who think, you know, there's no better way of spending a Saturday night than setting fire to your local library, I guess. So there's a lot to unpack there, and there is no coherent voice. I think what we did see on last Wednesday was, you know, the vast majority of right-thinking people come together to say, you know, this is not our Liverpool.
No.
So I'm not saying it's not important to understand those who perhaps have been caught up in what's happened. But I do think it's good to put it into perspective as well.
Are there specific types of disinformation that you're getting at here, you mean?
I mean, there's a lot of disinformation, I think, has been well documented about the suspect who was arrested in the wake of the in the wake of the stabbings of the little girl, about, you know, perhaps his religious background, how he may have arrived in this country as opposed to being born here. And, you know, the police quite early on were forced to issue a statement, you know, saying that that information, which was spread quite widely, was not correct, which is not a situation they should have been put in, because their focus needs to be obviously on the investigation that they're leading. So it's important, I think, that we are out there on the streets reporting on what happened and providing, you know, the facts, really.
Yeah. What kind of stance do you take on that disinformation? Do you go near it, or do you just leave it to the police to, you know, lay the facts out? What do you do with it?
We certainly reported on the fact that it was wrong.
Yeah.
We followed up on the police statement, but it was, we knew from the very beginning that it was not factually correct. So we were able to quite quickly knock that down, which was good for our audience and for our readers, I think, who may have seen it.
Yeah. Where does this story go from here? How long will it keep unfolding? What will be your focus as that happens?
I mean, obviously, there was the first funeral of one of the victims, Alice, on Sunday. There's another one this week. There'll be a third. And then it's a case, I think, of letting the judicial process take its course. There will be a trial, I assume, of the 17, now 18-year-old charged. And we will obviously follow that with live coverage when it happens. In terms of everything else, and in my mind, they're quite separate things. We will monitor what happens, and you know, we're covering the court cases, but at some point we will pick up on the sort of root causes behind it, I think.
What's your sense on any feelings of division still within your local community? Is that something you'll be thinking about?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think, it is quite shocking sometimes to look at the court cases and think, you know, you live on the street where you set fire to bins and sort of brick cars and looted shops. And I think there will be a time quite soon when we go back to those streets and just pick up on what the local feeling is. And we did that quite quickly. Some of the worst violent disorder we've seen here was on Saturday night in a place called Walton, County Road. It's a very well-known road in Liverpool. And we went back the next day, very early on, you know, smoke still in the air. And, you know, spoke to people who were like, this is not our County Road. You know, they were clearing up as, you know, the people who'd been sort of causing trouble were just going to bed. And we will go back to these areas and try and work with communities to understand, but also to rebuild, I think.
Can you single out for me one piece of reporting you've done over the last 2 weeks you're most proud of?
I think overall I'm proud mainly of the tone, of the compassion, of the consideration that all our reporting has shown. That is really important to me, and it's something that, you know, we've been singled out for, sometimes by the authorities, but mainly by readers who've got in touch and you know, offered their support and their good wishes. So it's more how we've done it than what we've done.
Why is that not a given, Maria? Why? How could it have been any different?
Sorry, I'm going to repeat myself. You can be swayed. You can see, you know, other media come in. They don't have the investment in the area that you have. They don't have the investment in the people that you have. And so it is just another job. It is another piece of reporting. And for us, it's a lot more than that.
So what have we learned so far? In such a delicate story like this one, it matters to put the local community first, rather than go with the headlines and splash stories that could further, as Maria puts it, fan the flames of division that are already reaching fever pitch. There will be a time and a place for the Liverpool Echo to look more closely at how this tragedy really happened and tell the full story on the riots that took place. But the tensions are too high right now, and Maria says her team will do this reporting when the time is right. Newsrooms must pick their moments rather than running headfirst into the headline story. Jumping too soon into these types of stories risks harming the families at the centre of the crisis, but also deepens mistrust towards the press, which is already an issue. There's no better example of that than the Liverpool Echo journalist who was physically assaulted as part of covering the riots. Maria tells us more about that.
They are an experienced journalist, but quite clearly shaken up. It was a sort of quite terrifying situation that night. I think it took very many people by surprise. The team had gone to Southport to cover a vigil for the three girls who died, and the disorder and the violence that broke out nearby, you know, wasn't something we were necessarily anticipating, or certainly not on the scale that we saw. And they were fine. They were back at work the next day. That was their own decision. There was certainly no pressure from us, and we have continued to support the journalist as they've covered other events linked to that night. But it has been a challenge for lots of people, really, I think, in terms of what we've seen on our streets over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. Was that the only instance of physical abuse against any of your journalists?
It was the only incident of physical abuse against our journalists, though I know there were colleagues from the wider Reach family who were spat on. I think one had to seek refuge in someone's home. But yes, in terms of our own journalists, yes.
Do you know the motive for the assault against your journalist?
I think it was clear that they were a journalist. And I think whoever perpetrated this obviously saw as part of the establishment, so as to speak.
Is that concerning for you?
Things so, yeah. I mean, of course it is. The company has been incredibly supportive in terms of our physical well-being throughout this this whole process. All our reporters or reporting staff are encouraged to like download and activate and use a safety connection app, and that means they've got contact with a member of our security team 24/7. Anyone involved in the coverage that we've seen over the past few weeks must have the app. We can issue hard hats for people who think disorder is a possibility when they go out on jobs. They always go out in teams. We always make sure they've got transport so they can leave the area safely. And they know, and we tell them repeatedly, the minute you know they feel unsafe, they should leave or withdraw. And the safety information has been updated constantly, and I know people who have been staffing the scenes on our street do feel their well-being is always a prime concern. But it's something that we take seriously as a newsroom, but the company takes extremely seriously too and has been incredibly supportive.
Definitely. What kind of specific aftercare support do you offer to your journalists once they've come back from a difficult story that's shaken them up, either physically or indeed mentally as well?
Well, I mean, I think everyone who's been working on what's happened over the past few weeks has been either exposed to, I don't know, distressing images maybe, or footage, or abusive communications. That we have guidance as a company on how to manage your exposure to distressing content, how to minimise and manage harassment or abuse online, and also access to welfare support. I mean, I think here we've tried to come up with practical solutions to ensure journalists, you know, best able to cope with covering harrowing news or the violent disorder we've seen, because not everyone's best equipped to cope emotionally, and so we try and ensure our rota reflects that to a certain degree. We've been talking a lot as a team. I think we've acknowledged in the newsroom that the events of the past 2 weeks can have a tremendous impact on their well-being, and so we encourage them to talk to line managers, to colleagues, or to use the welfare support systems across the company. And I think as managers, we've been looking out for everyone or anyone who seems particularly impacted by what's happened, and taking them to one side And I think it's also important to appreciate that we've got journalists in our newsroom doing very, very many different roles, I think, these days, and not all of them chose to pursue a career in hard news, so to speak. So we'll just need to ensure our behaviour and our language in the newsroom reflects this.
Yeah. It's one thing to offer support, of course. It's another for people to take it up. And I know as journalists we can be quite stubborn and want to, you know, think we have thick skin. Have your journalists actually been accepting the help on offer and taking up the support?
I don't know about the sort of official support that we have, and it's not, you know, it's perhaps for them to make that decision and pursue it, and it's not something that would necessarily be fed back to me unless there was particular concern. But I've certainly had quite a few chats with a lot of the team, just checking in on them, and, you know, we have obvious regular team meetings, and at that it's always stressed that, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, feeling impacted in any way whatsoever, and that they should share, you know, their concerns, their feelings, and people have done, and I think we've come together as a team to handle it in that way.
So mental health's not a taboo topic in your newsroom?
No, absolutely not. No, it's something that, you know, we talk openly about, and people are encouraged to talk openly about. I think really the main difference is the younger generation, and I know that makes me sound incredibly ancient, is just a lot more open, I think, and a lot more sharing, and they will talk a lot more about their feelings. So I think many years ago I might have been sent out on jobs and been absolutely terrified about the prospect of it, but I wouldn't talk about it. I'd just go and do it because that was my job. And I think now people are less reluctant to say what they feel about an assignment, and that's fine because it does enable us to talk through it and to discuss the best way of approaching it, and ensure that any concerns they have we can find a solution to, and we usually can.
Perfect. Well, Maria, listen, this has been wonderful to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming on our show. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. Take care.
My takeaway for today is not to lose sight of who your story impacts. As one prime example, Maria decided to lead the front page on the night of the Merseyside riots with a tribute of the three young girls who were killed. She told us how tempting it was to go the other way, but in the end, it came down to potential harm towards the families and the local community. Equally, these stories deeply impact journalists, and aftercare is essential to those who are reporting on the ground or in the courtrooms. Was your newsroom affected by the UK riots? Let's continue the conversation. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter/X@JPDjournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.